The war in Yemen continues to rage on. The United Nations now has said 8.4 million people are in need of emergency food assistance. In this edition of The Debate, we will look at the crisis in Yemen, which has been wrongly termed a civil war, the Saudi bombing campaign that still continues, and examine whether the death of the Saudi journalist by Saudi Arabia and some of its cohorts will affect the war and prevent it from continuing.
This is a children's hospital in the Yemeni capital, Sana'a, one of the few health facilities that are still operational in the war-ravaged country. This woman lost two of her children to diphtheria in just 1 week.
My daughter got ill all of a sudden. We tried to nurse her back to health in the neighborhood, but 2 days later she died. By the time we buried her, her brother fell ill, so we took him to Sana'a thinking they'd cure him, but he died yesterday.
The country has been grappling with the influx of epidemic diseases like cholera and diphtheria for over 3 years that has left hundreds of people dead. Millions more also facing starvation. The situation has sparked warnings of UN experts.
The conflict in Yemen has left 8.4 million people dependent on emergency food assistance, and 75% of its 22 million people require some form of aid.
The UN humanitarian chief has estimated that up to 4 million more people could become severely food insecure in the months ahead. Last month, charity organizations warned that Yemen has only enough food to sustain its population for 2 to 3 months. Some analysts have drawn a comparison between the murder of dissident Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi and the war on Yemen, and called for action to end the suffering because millions of lives are at risk.
I prefer to make a comparison between the case of Khashoggi and the case of the Yemen famine now. The case of one man who is a journalist, the whole world are making pressure on Saudi Arabia to stop killing him or to make a presentation about his case, about his position. But now we see millions of people in Yemen, nobody talk, nobody takes any attitude, real attitude toward these people.
Saudi Arabia has been bombing Yemen since March 2015, and the UN has warned that Yemen could be facing the worst famine in 100 years if airstrikes by the Saudi-led coalition are not halted.
Our guest joining us for this edition of The Debate, we have international relations and security analyst Mark Sloboda, who joins us from Moscow. Mark Sloboda, welcome. Got to cite some statistics here, which there have been plenty during this brutal war. One of them, which is the most recent one, UN experts saying that 8.4 million people in Yemen are in need of emergency food assistance, along with 75% of its 22 million population dependent on some sort of aid. When we hear these, or when you hear this type of statistic, which I'm sure you've heard many of the same kind or even worse, and you don't see any particular action that relieves Yemen of this dire emergency, how does that reflect on the inaction that is being prevented, in essence, by Saudi Arabia from reaching the people in Yemen?
Well, first of all, what we've heard not only is Saudi Arabia and its allies, the United Arab Emirates, the other members of the Gulf Cooperation Council, the United States, the United Kingdom, conducting a starvation blockade of Yemen. But UNICEF and other international organizations have reported that Saudi Arabia is deliberately targeting agricultural and food sources, particularly in the north of Yemen. This surely warrants investigation as an act of genocide. And with the United States and the United Kingdom not only providing bombs, the jets, the refueling, the C4 ISR, but actively providing the targeting information for Saudi Arabia according to themselves, they surely are not only complicit in these Saudi crimes, and these are war crimes, but they are culpable as well.
We have heard time and again in terms of one thing that you mentioned, and that is the U.S. role of providing intelligence among refueling missions for the Saudi and its coalition warplanes. Now, when it comes down to intelligence, maybe you can clarify for us what type of intelligence is the U.S. feeding Saudi Arabia, in what format, and where is it being used? On many occasions we've heard about civilian deaths occurring, probably one of the worst ones to have been that bus that carried so many civilians, killed up to, I think it was 50 or more, and many of them were below the age of 18.
Yeah, I mean, the most basic type of intelligence that the United States is providing is satellite information. But it goes far beyond that. They're providing intercept traffic. They have U.S. special forces are on the ground. That is, boots, ballet slippers, whatever you want to call them. U.S. military forces are on the ground in Yemen providing intelligence and other actions for the Saudi regime and its allies in their invasion of Yemen. Drones, both for reconnaissance and actual drone strikes, are another source. In the last days, BuzzFeed has quite a scoop, Adam Rosten, reporting that United States, U.S. mercenary group, the Spear Operations Group, which is incorporated in Delaware, with the U.S. State Department saying it provides oversight for all private security contractors, as they call them, based out of the United States. This operations group, by its own admission, has been conducting political assassinations of Yemeni political leaders, religious clerics, scholars, and activists in the country. And they're quite open about this. And not only are these ex-Navy SEALs, Green Berets, CIA Ground Branch, but several of them are actually serving in the National Guard and the Navy Reserve. That is, members of the U.S. military with top secret clearances are serving as contract killers for invading United Arab Emirates forces, assassinating political leaders in Yemen. This is an insane level of crime, both domestic and international. It's amazing that the media, it's a testimony to their moral bankruptcy, that only now, with the death of the Saudi journalist intelligence operative Hassagi at their own hands, are they finally starting to raise his voice of objection and caution about Yemen.
Yeah, it did take some time for this piece of news to break out, because it did happen, I think, maybe a couple of years back, if I'm not mistaken, this piece of news that you're talking about, Mark Sloboda. I'd like to elaborate more, get your elaboration more on this, because it is pretty amazing. But let me first introduce Michael Lane. He joins us from Washington, D.C. He's the president of the American Institute for Foreign Policy. Michael Lane, welcome. So you came in on this on the statements that Mark Sloboda was talking about.
Thank you very much.
This Buzz News, BuzzFeed news about a Middle East monarchy, namely Saudi Arabia, hiring American ex-soldiers to kill its political enemies. Now, this might go a little bit off the radar for us in terms of what we'd like to talk about in this debate. We'd like to get into this a little bit later, but I'd like to talk to you about Yemen, and maybe you can tell us where this war is going, especially in a sense now that the Khashoggi incident has happened. Do you think that the Saudi Arabia has lost some of its stature, I guess you can call it that, of the stature and the standing it had with some countries that supported it, including the U.S., and of course countries like France and the U.K., and even Germany, now that they've really are looking twice at Saudi Arabia. Do you think that may spill over in by some preventing this war from continuing?
It may change or alter the course of the war. I don't think it will prevent it in the short run from continuing. Look, you have one of two possibilities here. The mess that the Saudis have created as a result of the Khashoggi incident is bringing just tremendous scrutiny, tremendous sunshine, and a lot of international pressure on the Saudi regime. And they have to decide how they're going to respond to it. Their objective at this point is to relieve the pressure, to continue the regime as is without any particular crippling sanctions or anything like that. So how do they get to where they want to be? On the one hand, they can choose to crack down even further. They can choose to just internalize the whole thing and pay absolutely no attention to outside pressure, which will mean that they're doubling down on essentially what's been going on and makes it more difficult to bring it to an end. Or on the other hand, they could look at it as saying, okay, we've been caught with our hand in the cookie jar. We know we need to figure out some way to get out of this whole thing, perhaps by being not only a little bit more transparent, but by cooperating a little bit more with the international community, particularly the United States, which it's alleged often that the United States has complete control over the Saudi monarchy. We don't. They do their own thing, and a lot of times we look the other way. But if we have the power and the influence in return for letting Prince Salman stay in power, not that it's our decision, but in return for not creating conditions that will drive Prince Salman for power, if we have more influence and can persuade them to pursue the Yemen war in a different way, then I think that will, in time, give all sides the chance to get to the bargaining table and come up with a negotiated resolution to the situation, which is really what's been needed from the beginning, because as it's currently being fought, there is no military solution to the Yemen crisis.
Okay, I saw some reactions there from you, Mark Sloboda. Go ahead, reaction.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm in complete agreement with Michael Lane that the U.S. does not control Saudi Arabia. In fact, that particular tail often wags the U.S. dog. Saudi spends lavishly millions of dollars on U.S. think tanks. We've had top U.S. officials refer to the part of Washington, D.C., where the top U.S. foreign policy think tanks are centered, as Arab-occupied territory. That gives you some type of idea of the corrupting influence of Saudi and other Gulf dictatorship money on Washington's foreign policy elite, the blob, and the process for determining foreign policy, all the way from the think tanks up through the politicians in Congress and in the administrations in Washington, D.C. So, yes, I agree, by no means. And in fact, I would say that Saudi Arabia has far too much influence. And if there is any country other than Israel that has meddled continually in U.S. politics, it is Saudi Arabia. And the U.S. reaction the number of Saudis that were involved in the bombing of the World Trade Center and their quick actions to evacuate Saudi royal family members from the United States despite the flight ban, and their refusal to allow court cases against Saudi Arabia to go forward in the United States. All of this speaks damning testimony, it raises, who's the master and who's the servant between Saudi Arabia and the United States. I don't know the answer to that question. I don't think they do in Washington either.
Well, this is what's happening in a sense, Michael Lane. The international rights organizations and by some media outlets in the States, though very minimally, have highlighted the deaths and civilian deaths that are happening in Yemen. It appears that perhaps this is going to get highlighted more. We're looking at a catastrophe here. It's called the worst famine that may occur in 100 years. And by the end of September, some 22, which is passed, 0.2 million Yemenis, or three quarters of the population, will be in need of assistance, 18.4 million of whom are not getting enough food to eat. If for some reason we will get all the facts, hopefully soon, about what has occurred, and Saudi Arabia is found guilty, because the Turkish President Erdogan said Khashoggi was killed in a horrendous way, and Saudi Arabia is found guilty, don't you think that that's going to affect Saudi Arabia? There will be an international backlash, and the U.S. and perhaps both Saudi Arabia and the U.S. have to make a decision on this war.
Yes, I think I heard most of your question. Regrettably, just as you began your question, I'm getting intermittent audio here. But the question, as I understand it, if I heard enough of it, is that with the allegations against Saudi Arabia in the Khashoggi incident, if they turn out to be real, verified, or the details are more or less the story that we hear now, will that create conditions that will force Saudi Arabia to act and behave differently? I believe it's got a possibility. As I said, they could internalize this whole thing. They could go the wrong way. They could just cut the rest of the world out for the time being and say, we're not going to respond to any pressure. Or they could do the right thing, which is to become more transparent, become more open, become more cooperative, become more human rights oriented. And as long as there is some face-saving mechanism for Prince Salman to stay in power, then he has the opportunity to do all that. If he decides to go the other way, then I believe that it will get worse in Yemen, but I believe it will also get worse for Saudi Arabia on the world stage.
Going the other way, Mark Sloboda, would mean what for Saudi Arabia?
Yeah, I don't think it would mean much, to be perfectly honest. The U.S., the West, they depend too much on Saudi Arabia, the tripod of the U.S., Saudi Arabia, and Israel, for regional hegemony of the Middle East and control of the energy flows through that area. I mean, the worst thing that we have heard so far, other than back and forth equivocating tweets from Trump, is Germany announcing that future arms sales to the Saudi regime committing war crimes and acts of genocide in their invasion of Yemen will be put on pause. Not the weapons that have already been sold, but future arms sales. The Trump administration, Trump immediately said, oh, we can't stop arms sales. The U.S. sells hundreds of billions of dollars of advanced arms to Saudi Arabia. And Trump says, well, we can't stop that because that would cost American jobs. And that shows the priorities for the U.S. American jobs in the military-industrial complex, Yemeni lives, children, and starvation on the other. You know, we see where the scales are in the sense of morality in Washington. And it's not just Trump, because it was the other party, the Democratic Party, with President Obama, that initiated these extremely large arms sales to Saudi Arabia, and that began U.S. assistance and gave full military, active military assistance and backing to Saudi and their Gulf dictatorship allies' invasion of Yemen. So I don't think in the long run anything significant will be done to Saudi Arabia. I think it will be whitewashed. They'll throw a few, quote, rogue intelligence agencies under the bus, and that will more or less satisfy the Washington establishment. And that is really quite a shame. I mean, Mohammed bin Salman is the primary suspect, the crown prince, for having ordered this brutal murder, with three of his bodyguards having been identified by Western mainstream media as the ones that were involved in killing and dismembering him. But who is heading the internal investigation of Saudi Arabia into this affair? Mohammed bin Salman. It's farcical. It's grotesque, but it's farcical.
Well, Michael Lane, U.S. lawmakers are challenging Trump's support for the Saudi war in Yemen. That has grown louder, voices within now of even the Republican Party. You have had more recently a bipartisan group of senators that are seeking some answers from the U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo on this, over backing some of these Persian Gulf countries like well, the UAE, who's involved in this war, and of course then Saudi Arabia, they can't seem to justify how the U.S. can be behind this war when they keep hearing about these civilian casualties. Do you think the Khashoggi Chase case now will push them into being more proactive in somehow getting Trump to stop this war?
Well, I do think it will gain invisibility. In fact, it already has gained invisibility. The Yemen war was, you know, the best kept secret in the world, particularly the best kept secret in the United States. I know we have discussed Yemen on this program multiple times, and it always sort of surprised me that the whole Yemen war, the conflict, everything together was not a higher profile story here in the United States. It was just the forgotten thing. It was never, ever reported on. Now, as a result of a single incident of Mr. Khashoggi, now all of a sudden the spotlight is on Saudi Arabia and everything Saudi Arabia has done. I'd venture to guess there has been more press stories written on Yemen in the last 10 days here in the United States than in the last 3 years. Americans know more about what is going on in Yemen in the last 10 days than they have in the last 3 years. So as the information gets out and as some senators and members of Congress grandstand and do what they want to do to bring attention to what Saudi Arabia is doing and their opposition to arms sales, particularly people like Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky and his colleagues, then, you know, you're talking about sunlight and you're talking about education of the American people. They can't stop, just as we talked about Germany, and Angela Merkel has said, well, future arms sales are not are probably going to be a problem. It's the same thing. The way the process is set up in America, the current deals for arms sales are going to go through. There's no way to stop them. The only one who can stop them is President Trump, and he's not going to do that.
Okay.
So now we're again looking years down the road at future arms sales.
Uh-huh. 30 seconds to you, Mark Sloboda. If we get another bombing and it claims civilian lives, how would that reflect on Saudi Arabia? And what kind of reaction will that bring? 30 seconds, please.
Yeah, there's bombings killing civilians every single day in Yemen. I mean, that's nothing new. There was news of another bombing killing another five civilians in Yemen in just the past 24 hours. Nothing. That will affect nothing because civilians have been dying all along, and only now is the Western mainstream media, starting to draw some more attention to it. The U.S. media has been reporting on Yemen, but it hasn't punctured the narrative. It hasn't punctured the political culture in Washington. Why? Because the U.S. is involved in the war on the side of Saudi Arabia and their Gulf dictatorship allies.
Thank you very much for that. International relations and security analyst Mark Sloboda. Thank you, President of the American Institute of Foreign Policy, Michael Lane. Thank you for watching another edition of The Debate. From Mikovic Avoy, entire team in the capital of Tehran, it's goodbye.